Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At ADP, we understand the importance of building the right team and offer the data insights to help. Just as importantly, our AI technology helps you pay the team accurately. Grow stronger with ADP, HR, talent, time, and payroll.
Hey, what's up? It's your man Carlos Miller of the 85 South Show. Do me a favor, make sure you check out The Black Market, hosted by me, only on the 85 South Show feed. Subscribe to the 85 South Show to hear and tune in to The Black Market. Hear amazing interviews with entrepreneurs, creatives, and thought leaders, people who are doing amazing things in the black community. Listen to The Black Market on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome to Money Making Conversations. It's the show that shares the secrets of success experienced firsthand by marketing and branding expert Rashawn McDonald. I will know. He's given me advice on many occasions, and in case you didn't notice, I'm not broke. You know he'll be interviewing celebrity CEOs, entrepreneurs, and industry decision makers. It's what he likes to do. It's what he likes to share. Now it's time to hear from my man, Rashawn McDonald. Money Making Conversations. Here we go.
Welcome to Money Making Conversation. I am your host, Rashawn McDonald. I tell people every week as we start this show, it's time to stop reading other people's success stories and actually start writing your own. A lot of people are held back. I always tell people you're here by gifts. You're here by passions. I tell people to lead with their gifts and don't let their age, especially their age, friends, family, or coworkers stop you from planning or living your dream. My interviews I bring on Money Making Conversations, you might see with celebrities, CEOs, entrepreneurs, and what I like to call industry decision makers. My next guest is Craig Melvin. He's the co-host of the Today Show and the author of the book Pops, Learning to Be a Son and a Father. You may know Craig. He's an award-winning news anchor, as I said earlier, on the Today Show. You also have seen him on MSNBC Live and a host of Dateline. He's on the show to discuss his book, Pops, Learning to Be a Son and a Father. It's the story of all the father figures in Craig's life, and that includes inspiring men from his program or his series called Dad's Got This series on NBC News Today. These experiences and encounters have shaped Craig's understanding of his own role as a dad, and I'm sure I can be related. We're going to have a nice conversation since Father's Day has recently passed. He has two young children. Please welcome to Money Making Conversation, my man, Craig Melvin. How you doing, Craig?
Rashawn, I'm well. Thank you so much for having me. I always enjoy your conversation, so honored to be a part of one.
Thank you, my man. A Southern boy, South Carolina, okay?
There you go.
You know, when I see people on TV and you're so articulate, they'll know y'alls, they'll know accents. How does a man come straight out of Columbia? And I know Columbia because Steve Harvey and I used to go down a lot performing at the Town Center, selling that place out all the time. So I'm very familiar with South Carolina, Charleston, that whole low country. There's no low country in your Tone, what's going on here? How you break that low country accent?
Oh, it's funny because I never had it. My mom, you'll appreciate this, growing up in Houston, the way that you grew up. My mom grew up in the projects and first in the family to go to college and first in the family to get a graduate degree. Mm-hmm. So when we came along, she wanted to expose us to things and places that she had not been exposed to.
Right.
And consequently, I was probably 14 or 15, and she had us take part in these oratorical contests.
Right.
And that was kind of how it started. So I took some public speaking classes and then these oratorical contests. And then the next thing you knew, I had what they like to call in the business a nondescript dialect where you can't really tell based on listening to me where I'm from. So it's a blessing now. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, it was always he's talking white.
Absolutely.
He talks like a white boy. So it's, you know, it was a curse. Now it's a blessing.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I knew in my middle school, yeah, I remember my teacher used to always ask me to read. Used to always ask me to read. And, you know, people talk about bullying. And, you know, when people talk about, they call you snowflake. That was a form of bullying. And then so it's popularized now because people are willing to talk about it. But we all grew up in some form of physical or mental abuse from high school kids or people in the neighborhood. And I remember this girl, she made such a big deal that I was always asked to read that it almost, I have to say, traumatized me because I went exactly the opposite. I wanted to talk. I wanted to say ain't. I wanted to slur my words. I wanted to fit in. And so with you, I bring that story up because you talk about it because you was hit with it. You was hit, you know, talking white, didn't want to act white, you calling you snowflake. What kept you focused? What kept you from veering off like I veered off? I veered off and I said, hey, man, I want to fit in and not be me.
You know, I think it was, and I write about it in the book, my mother really, Rashawn, I mean, she kept us on the straight and narrow. At the time, we resented the strictness. I mean, my mom, she knew all of our friends.
Right.
She knew all of the parents. We weren't allowed to stay out past, you know, during the week, maybe 9 o'clock, maybe on the weekends when kids were going to parties and having fun. I was doing oratorical contests and church activities. And I went to, in high school, I think I probably went to maybe 3 high school football games on Friday night. I grew up on a very tight leash.
Right.
And part of it was my mother overcompensating for my father not being the kind of dad that he should have been. Mm-hmm. But part of it was mom knew, she knew back then, I think, kind of what it took. She was a school teacher. Then she went into administration. She knew what it took to shape and mold young black boys, especially.
Right.
And that was it. Had it not been for her, had I grown up in another house, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Well, you know, in writing your book, you know, the book we're talking, interviewing Craig Melvin, his book, Pops, Learning to Be a Son and a Father. Is it because of the fact that your father wasn't there, that she maybe overcompensated and wanted to make sure you had a better life or you pursued the options, even though I knew she went to college? And I think at the age of 22 is when she became pregnant with you.
It's finally here, the season of celebration. And no matter how you celebrate with family and friends, whether you're preparing for Reyes Magos or Karamu, lighting the menorah, or going to midnight mass, Kohl's has just what you need to make those traditions special. Plus, you'll find gifts for all your loved ones. Send warm wishes with cozy fleeces, sweaters, loungewear, blankets, and throws. Support minority-owned or founded brands by giving gifts from Human Nation and Shea Moisture. Or treat them to everyone's favorite activewear from top brands like Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour. And in the spirit of giving, Kohl's Cares is donating $8 million to local nonprofits nationwide committed to the health and well-being of our communities. No matter how you celebrate, when you shop at Kohl's, you're right where you belong. So this season, give with all your heart with great gifts from Kohl's or Kohl's.com.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
But talk about that in the middle of this, because as we talk about trying to shape you, because of the fact that you've been shaped by a lot of people, especially the stories. We're going to talk about the prison incident when you was out at Camp Grace, how that really kind of like started you in this direction of humanizing all men, especially men who are incarcerated. Talk about your mom and her role versus your dad role, because you mentioned it just a little bit. But yeah, that centers around us getting into the story and your father changing his life at the age of 67.
So mom had to play the role of mom and dad for the better part of my childhood. Right. It was a role that she was, she was fortunately well prepared for it, because she had to take care of her three younger siblings when she was in college, and her father skipped out of the family, ended up essentially dying on the streets in squalor. Because my father was not physically present as often as I would have liked, and my younger brother would have liked, and my older brother as well, mom stepped in to fill the gap. She filled a void. And not just being present in the sense of Sean, Little League games or soccer games or concerts, not just physically present, but emotionally present.
Right.
Spiritually present.
Right.
I mean, the relationship that I have with God is because of my mother's relationship with God. So it was divine intervention. You know, had I had any other mother, things would not have gone the way that they did. But, you know, it's also, and I write about it in the book, as you know, and I do appreciate the fact that you read the book. You'd be surprised how often we talk to people about books and they haven't read word one. But I can tell you read the whole thing. And I write about in the book, my father. I asked him during the course of my interviews with him for the book. I said, "Pops, what was the most money you ever wasted?" Mm-hmm. Without missing a beat, he said it was about $1,500 back in 1986. Mm-hmm. I said, "Well, that was a lot of money back then. What'd you spend that money on?"
Right.
He said, "That's how much it cost to put my daddy in the ground." Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I realized that while I had been frustrated by the lack of relationship I had with my dad, it was exponentially better than the relationship he had with his own father.
Right.
He didn't even know who his dad was until he was almost a teenager. So it was wholly unrealistic of me to expect him to be the kind of dad that I had come to idolize. He couldn't be it because he hadn't seen it. And you can't be something. Or scratch that. It's really hard to be something.
Yes.
If you haven't seen it, if you haven't been exposed to it. So that's what my dad was up against.
Well, you know, when I read the book, I heard Shotgun House. Okay, I grew up I was born in a shotgun house, 2-bedroom shotgun house. A lot of people, if you listen to the shotgun house, open to the front door, shoot a gun out, shotgun out go out the front back door, don't hit anything. That's a shotgun house, okay?
Yo.
You reference pig feet. Grew up with pig feet, my man. Hey, I wouldn't touch them now, Greg. I wouldn't touch them now. But pig feet were part of my lifestyle. And so that's the Southern. I'm from Houston, Texas. I'm from the South. It was a lifestyle that was normal to me, but it was also a community lifestyle of people taking care of each other. And that was really important. Not only your dad, even though there were some missteps, there was still people there to take care of him, you know, to make sure he was focused, to shout at him as he became an adult. There were people in the community. That's really important in this book, that no matter what, there's some form of family t- tied to your story and the people in your life. Talk about that.
You know, it's funny because long before people started talking about it taking a village to rear a child, I had a village. We, you know, it wasn't called that back in the 80s in South Carolina, back in the 80s and 90s when I grew up, but I had a village. And yes, there were a number of men who played the role of dad along the way. My Uncle James, my Uncle Jake, my Uncle Frank. But there were also a lot of women that played the part as well. I was disciplined, and I think that's the politically correct term. I was disciplined by more women growing up than men, whether it was my mom or one of my aunts or my grandma. I spent a lot of time with mm-hmm. my two grandmothers growing up. Mm-hmm. And they really shaped me in myriad ways that I didn't fully appreciate until I was older.
Right.
But then after that, I had coaches along the way. God always blessed me with people along the road.
Right.
That gave me a little part of something that I was able to take and build on.
Right.
It's difficult for young Black men, especially. It's difficult to learn how to carry yourself in this world without examples of it. And I had lots of examples, thankfully, along the way. But the reality is, as you know, Sean, a lot of kids don't have that.
Right.
A lot of kids don't. They just, you know, through no fault of their own, mind you, mm-hmm. they don't have a mother or a father or an uncle or an aunt mm-hmm. to take their hand on this journey of life. And so they end up finding role models that should not be held up, or that should right. not be on a pedestal. And right. they begin to emulate them.
And we're live here outside the Perez family home, just waiting for the... And there they go, almost on time this morning. Mom is coming out the front door strong with a double arm kid carry. Looks like dad has the bags. Daughter is bringing up the rear. Oh, but the diaper bag wasn't closed. Diapers and toys are everywhere. Ooh, but mom has just nailed the perfect car seat buckle for the toddler. And now the eldest daughter, who looks to be about 9 or 10, has secured herself in the booster seat. Dad zips the bag closed, and they're off. Ah, but looks like mom doesn't realize her coffee cup is still on the roof of the car. And there it goes. Oh, that's a shame. That mug was a fam favorite.
Don't sweat the small stuff. Just nail the big stuff. Like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Learn more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Look through your children's eyes to see the true magic of a forest. It's a storybook world for them. You look and see a tree. They see the wrinkled face of a wizard with arms outstretched to the sky. They see treasure in pebbles. They see a windy path that could lead to adventure. And they see you, their fearless guide through this fascinating world.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You know, the thing I really like about your book is that sometimes, my father was a truck driver. You know, so, you know, when he wasn't driving trucks, you know, he wasn't really connected to me. I can tell you, he was my father. I can tell you that. My mom was there for me. My mom pushed me. My mom always felt that I could be somebody special in life. When your father showed up for your ball game, that memory, you don't know if you got a hit, a home run, or got struck out every time you went up the bat, but you remember that moment. And then when your mom rescued you when you thought you had entered early fatherhood, you know, those are two moments that really, I bring up those two moments, Craig, because despite of all the things we do in our life, there are always memories that mm-hmm. really, some haunt people, some inspire people. Your father showing up for your game, and your mom, I basically coming to the rescue because she did something that enabled you to relax. Talk about those two key moments of parenting. Even though your father wasn't there, that was a key parenting moment that he provided for you that stays with you today and probably carries into your parenting with your children today. And then your mom being there for you at a moment of doubt, frustration, fear, but both of them were there at different times.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the part of my book where I almost became a teenage father. I was almost a statistic at the age of 14, no less. I made a bad choice. I made a bad choice. And you know what? I write about it because I wrote about it because I wanted people to understand there, but for the grace of God, go I. And I think a lot of folks can relate to this idea that, you know, there's that night or sometimes that day, but usually it's that night where you went left, but you could have gone right.
Right.
You went right. And had you made a different decision, it would have altered the course of your life in a dramatic way.
Mm-hmm.
That almost happened to me. I got lucky. And at that point in my life, I didn't have much of a relationship with my father.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid of my mother, deathly afraid. So I couldn't talk to her about it. And it was a situation where, you know, this young lady was convinced she was pregnant. And I had to do something. This was not one of those situations where inaction was an option.
Right.
And I write in the book about how I went to my aunt. And it was my aunt that finally convinced me that I had no choice but to talk to my mother.
Right.
But my mom has always been, long before we started calling people fixers, my mom was a fixer. Like that obviously was an extreme example, but there were so many other times in my life where I thought I was out of options. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I prayed to God and put trust in Betty Jo Melvin. And Betty Jo Melvin always came through and still does now, mind you, in a different way. My dad, you know, wrote about that part in the book, Rashawn, where he showed up at my Little League game. And the memory stayed with me because it was so rare to that point. My dad, and again, now, looking back on it, knowing what we know about addiction, about it being a disease and not a weakness, I understand why he wasn't there. I understand why he had walled himself off from our family and society at large. But back then, I was a kid. You know, I was a kid who wanted my dad to be proud of me and see me and certainly watch my Little League games. And so when he showed up that evening and I saw him down the third baseline there on the fence, it's a memory that stayed with me because it was so rare. That being said, now he's everywhere. Like, he was up 2 weeks ago. My son had a soccer game. My dad was right there with me on the sideline. and 30 seconds in, my boy hadn't scored a goal all season. 30 seconds in, dribble, 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 shoot, score. First goal of the game. And me and my pops are high-fiving like he had just won a green jacket at Augusta.
Yes. You know, it was the book is an emotional book. I would say emotional because I told people when I get a book like this, I have to slow read it because sometimes it'll hit points where I go, I'm about to go there. I'm not. Let me finish this moment. And because I remember a moment with my dad, 1992, when I owned a comedy club. And my dad had never, ever been to anything I've been. And he just showed up at the comedy club. And it was sold out. And I looked in the lobby. I said, "What you doing here, Dad?" He go, "I come to see my son."
Oh,
and he looked around. And he looked, "Wow, this you? This you? This you?" And I went, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir." You know, because I always said sir to my dad.
Yeah.
And he said, "I'm proud of you, son." And like I said, because that's what the book did to me as a dad. Because when you start talking about incarceration, and you talk about, remember you said earlier, right turn, left turn, those turns. I always say that when I was in college, you know, you pledged a fraternity, I pledged Omega Psi Phi, and you always do stupid things. I remember the big brother said, "We want some plants." Well, we didn't have no money. And so I remember this giant open field where they had plants back in the day. And me and my Lion Brothers, we went and stole these plants, man. I mean, if you look back on it, Craig, from the freeway, you would have seen us running across this field with these plants, okay? So anybody could have went, what are those black dudes, boys doing right. running with all these giant plants? Right. And I had a little Fiat X19, which is a two-seater, and the truck was in the front. So I had to put the plants in the front, and it was blocking my windshield. So all along the way, I could have stopped by the police and been incarcerated. And my life could have changed on that right turn, left turn that you were talking about earlier. You are meeting men who've done something far worse than what I've talked about, but they have made a mistake. And sometimes because they've made a mistake, we don't give them a second chance because we feel that they are unworthy of that second chance. And then in your book, you talk about, guess what? They are fathers too. Yep. Let's talk about that journey of you doing a story, I think basically changed your life. And it started with Camp Grace.
Yeah, it was one of the most impactful stories I've ever done. And I don't even remember how we found out about this camp, but I was probably reading some article in an obscure publication about this summer camp at a maximum security prison in California, Salinas State Valley Prison. Yes. Is the name of the facility. And for 1 week every summer, they bring in about a dozen or so kids to basically have a camp experience with their dads. I mean, you know, arts and crafts, and they play games and they sing songs and they do all the stuff that you would do at a camp. I mean, these kids are between the ages of, you know, 7 or 8 and 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. And the guys who are part of the program have to exhibit good behavior for a full year. The camp is a privilege. And I went out and spent some time talking to these guys. And it ended up being just an emotional day because these are men, first of all, most of them are not going to be getting out of prison. I mean, some of them have been convicted of doing some pretty heinous things. Mm-hmm. But the two women that started the camp, both of their husbands were incarcerated and consequently weren't really a part of the child's lives. They would get the occasional visit, you know, on a weekend and you've got the glass, but they weren't able to really be a part of the child's life. So they came up with this idea for a camp. And I talked to one of the guys out there and I asked him the question I knew a lot of people were going to be asking when they watched or read the story. How can someone accused of some of the things these guys were accused of, how in what universe do they deserve the right to yes. spend time with a child?
Yes.
And without missing a beat, he said to me, tears in his eyes, they might be right. I may not deserve it, but you know what, Craig? My kids do.
Right.
My kids deserve to know their father. They didn't do anything wrong. They didn't make any bad choices. And his larger point, and I think this was just as valid, if we're serious about stopping the prison pipeline that we always talk about, then we need to make sure that kids of incarcerated individuals have relationships with them. He spent a fair amount of his time talking to his daughter right. about choices, making yes. good choices, yes. not ending up where he ended up. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic program, and it moved me. And it also moved me, Rashawn, because you know my grandmother, and it's the first line in the book, not to give away too much, but you know my grandmother, now when I knew her, she was either going to church, at church, or coming right. home from church. Like she only loved the Lord.
Yes.
But apparently, long before I came along.
Well, I'll tell you what, Craig, let's just say she's a bootlegger. I won't give away no more than that. Just say she's a bootlegger. I don't want to give away the other part, okay? She's a bootlegger. Yeah.
She was a bootlegger. She was a bootlegger. And got a second chance.
Yes, she did.
And had she not gotten a second chance, who's to say whether I would be here right now, you know?
Well, here's the thing I want to point out about that. Now, his grandmother was in the same jail that Martha Stewart was in.
Yes.
So she got, how many chances has she got? Okay. But in the same facility now. And so when I read the book and it's, it, like I said, it's an emotional journey because it's your story. But it's a relatable story because I remember when my younger brother was incarcerated in California and glass talking and I was in tears and he told me he couldn't cry. He said, I can't cry. I can't, they can't. He said, I can't. And my nickname is Ricky. He said, Ricky, I can't cry. Because they see me crying out here, I pay a price when I go back inside. And in that book, you know, the gentleman you interviewed, he said, look, he said, thank God I have a cell by myself. Because now I can cry. And so I love the fact that you were humanizing people, because we see the violent sides, and nobody's trying to downplay that. But we have made mistakes. There are people on the other side of this that have to deal with it emotionally. These are kids. And like one of them said, look, it's all right early on when you're playing cards and you're playing catch, but when they become teens, the conversation becomes different. Yeah. And that's what fatherhood's all about, which leads to your whole life of being a father, being connected to your dad, and now being a present day father. Let's talk about that, Craig.
You know, I think that you can be shaped by negative examples.
Yes.
Just as much as you can be shaped by positive examples. In fact, I think in some instances, maybe even more so. Mm-hmm. So, you know, growing up, I didn't know the kind of man that I wanted to be. I certainly didn't know the kind of father that I wanted to be. But up until a few years ago, I knew I didn't want to be anything like my dad.
Yes.
And that was what motivated me personally and professionally, probably to a certain extent, now that I'm talking about it. But no, it's funny, because I have to remind my kids sometimes that I have a job, and consequently, I cannot be at their beck and call day and night, because, you know, when my dad was there when we were younger, it was big. Like, it was a wedding or funeral.
Yes.
Or graduation, or that little league game that I write about that I remember because it was so weird. Dad didn't show up for stuff, in part because he worked third shift at the post office, but in larger part because of the addiction issues that he had. Mm-hmm. So as a result, I've gone to the other end of the spectrum. So if, you know, I'm there for soccer games, and my daughter had a gymnastics recital last Sunday morning, and, you know, so I'm physically present as often as and as much as I can be. You know, I do school pickup and drop up. I try to do it all because, you know, my dad didn't do any of it. Now the problem that you create when you do that, and it took me a while to figure this out. I've created expectations.
Yes.
So if I'm not there, it's like, oh, daddy's got to travel for work. Well, daddy, can you take a later flight? Or maybe can you go tomorrow? And I've had to say a few times, you know, that it's the job that pays for all of this. You don't get to go to dance, or you don't get to go to soccer if daddy's not hopping on plane.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
So that's the unfortunate part. But they're starting to understand. But it's funny, as you become a parent, how you at some point become the kind of, for me at least, the kind of father that I used to mock.
Yes.
I hated when my dad would talk about, you know, how much something costs, and we don't have money for this. and when we were younger, we didn't. Like, he wasn't lying. Like, we knew we didn't have a lot of money. We knew we had enough. With my kids, you know, I've said a few times, well, we can't afford this. And my son, without missing a beat, will say, well, yes, we can. No, you can. And I'm like, and then you find yourself trying to come up with a new excuse, like, well, maybe we can't afford it, but that we don't need it. You don't need that.
Right.
You know, so it's hard.
Craig, I know we're about to wrap up, but I want to bring up a very a fun moment as a parent that I want to share with you, because you wrote about it when your son climbed into bed, and, you know, and then your kids, when they sleep, if you don't have children, if you got a very young child, when they climb into bed, they forget you in bed. Kids are the worst sleepers in the world, especially when they get that 6 to 10 years of age. They're the worst sleepers. And so when you said that in the book, you said you may miss that. I remember when I talked to my daughter when she was like 17. I said, hey, won't you hop in bed and watch a TV show? What you talking about? I said, you know, Can we not watch a TV? Can we not watch TV together? Man, we used to go, I don't do that no more, Dad. No, we're not doing that. So I would tell you this, Craig, that moment brought laughter to me. It brought back memories. As your book, you know, the amazingly good book, Pops, Learning to Be a Son and a Father, man, it's a great read. And like I said, it slowed me. When I said the word slowed me, because I was becoming emotional. Because, like I said, my father was a beer drinker. My father worked hard as a truck driver. My father, like I said, was he in my life? I don't know. But did he shape me to be the man I am today? Yes, he did, because he had a role in it. And that role has made me to be the man I am. I like to believe I'm a good parent to my daughter, a good husband to my wife. And those are the things that the stories that you tell out of this book, from the incarcerated to individuals who raised you as a family, the community, and whether teachers who shaped you as third grade teachers who shaped you as you go through life and you went to school and you didn't want to shame your uncle when you didn't pledge Cap Alpha Psi. But it was all good, man. I love your book, Craig. I want to appreciate you for putting it out there, man. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. I've enjoyed this conversation. You're very good at what you do. Thank you for having me.
Okay, we talk soon, man. I'm gonna put this out. I got a nice little social media. I'm gonna put that out there in my newsletter. We're gonna get that out there for you, okay, Craig?
Thank you, sir. Be well, okay?
All right, bye-bye. If you want to see or hear any of my interviews on Money Making Conversation, please go to moneymakingconversation.com. I'm Rashawn McDonald. I am your host.
In this season of giving, Kohl's has gifts for all your loved ones. For those who like to keep it cozy, find fleeces, sweaters, loungewear, blankets, and throws. Or support minority-owned or founded brands by giving gifts from Human Nation and Shea Moisture. And in the spirit of giving, Kohl's Cares is donating $8 million to local nonprofits nationwide. Give with all your heart this season with great gifts from Kohl's or Kohl's.com.
In the time before AT&T Fiber Internet...
What are you doing in me dungeon?
It's the only place where the bloody Wi-Fi works.
Oh, and you don't mind the spiders?
Spiders? What spiders? Oh, no, they're everywhere!
In the time after AT&T Fiber Internet.
It's nice having fast, reliable Wi-Fi in the whole house.
For sure.
The dawn of a better internet era with AT&T Fiber.
Limited availability in select areas. Check eligibility at att.com/getfiber. AT&T smart Wi-Fi extenders may be required. Sold separately. Restrictions apply.
When I was 18 years old... a nun at my high school was brutally murdered. Getting to the truth has opened a Pandora's box of secrets, exposing abuse of power and a world of lies at one Miami monastery.
I mean, the woman was stabbed 90-plus times. There's got to be something else going on here.
Listen to Sacred Scandal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.